John chapter 12, beginning now at verse 20. Now there were certain Greeks among them who came up to worship at the feast. Then they came to Philip, who was from Bethsaida of Galilee, and asked him, saying, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." Philip came and told Andrew, and in turn, Andrew and Philip told Jesus. But Jesus answered them, saying, "The hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified." This is a very important passage that we're entering into this morning. It's the second half of John chapter 12, from verse 20 all the way through to verse 50. And what's important about this section is that it closes out the public ministry of Jesus in the Gospel of John. Starting with chapter 13, Jesus is going to focus himself in speaking to his disciples, and then he's going to do his great work on the cross, and then he's going to rise from the dead. But friends, all of that happens not as part of Jesus' public preaching ministry and representative ministry to the multitude. We're going to hear this morning the last words in the Gospel of John that Jesus speaks to the multitude. But all of this is set in motion. It's set in motion because it says in verse 20 that certain Greeks came and inquired about Jesus. We don't know who these Greek people were. First of all, they may not have been ethnically Greek. Sometimes the Bible uses the term Greeks just to refer to Gentiles. So they might have just been Gentiles. And we don't know if they were God-fearers, in other words, people who are just sort of partially invested in Judaism. We don't know if they were converts. We don't know if they were just tourists. There were tourists in the ancient world who would just go around and ask questions. But there was something about Jesus that caught their attention. Maybe it was the buzz in the crowd. Maybe they heard him teach. Maybe they saw him do a miracle. Whatever it was, there was something about Jesus that caught their attention. And in verse 21, you see that they came to the disciples and they said, "Sir, we want to see Jesus. We wish to see Jesus." And first of all, don't you think, isn't that a beautiful phrase? We wish to see Jesus. Friends, there is something wonderful about Jesus that is magnetic and draws people unto himself. And when these people saw something about him, they wanted to see more. And I'll just say it very easily. There is something wonderful about people when they're curious about Jesus. We should encourage it. People who have this curiosity, we should build it in them. We should encourage it along the way. It's good to be curious about Jesus Christ. Maybe some of you fall into that category here. Maybe you wouldn't even consider yourself a Christian like other people in this room would. But I hope I can make you curious about Jesus. I hope you can say, there's something about that man that's different than anybody else. I want to find out about him. I want to read the Bible. I want to hear what people say about Jesus. I want to enter into that. It's a good thing to be curious about Jesus. And that's the place where these particular Greek people were at. But when Jesus heard that, his response is interesting. In verse 23, it tells us that Jesus' response was something like this. He said, "Now the hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified." There was some kind of trigger in the interest of these Gentiles to meet with Jesus that made him say, now's the time. Things are set in motion. Things are along a track now. Now is the time. The hour has come. You see, previously in the Gospel of John, there had been several occasions where Jesus has said, my hour has not yet come. Not yet come. Not yet come. Now it's come. Now's the time. Now's the time to set in motion these important things. For him to do what? Look at it there in verse 23. The hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Now look, I wish that I could wipe your mind clean of what the Bible says, and you were reading this for the very first time, and you never heard anything about Jesus, and you just read that one line. Now has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. And you say, wow, he's going to be glorified. That's pretty cool. Maybe you're thinking of an awards banquet. It's the Academy Awards. And in the category of Best Galilean Teacher and Miracle Worker, the winner is Jesus of Nazareth. And he comes up, and oh, it's great. He's glorified. Look, everybody thinks he's wonderful. There's Jesus before the whole crowd. He's glorified. Friends, you and I know that what Jesus meant by this was that now the hour has come for the Son of Man to be crucified. Crucified? Glorified? Friends, those two terms don't normally go together. But we're going to see how Jesus explains what he means by that. But I just want you to be struck by how strange this is. That Jesus looks at his coming crucifixion and he considers it a glorification. But this is why. Look at verse 24. Most assuredly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the ground and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it produces much grain. He who loves his life will lose it, and he who hates his life in this world will keep it for eternal life. If anyone serves me, let him follow me. And where I am, there my servant will be also. If anyone serves me, him my Father will honor. I want you to notice something. Jesus says, let me tell you why my crucifixion will be a glorification. It'll be that way because I, like a seed, will be planted in the ground. I'm going to, so to speak, he's speaking in metaphors, of course. I'm going to die. I'm going to be buried like a seed dies and is buried. But look at what comes forth from that one seed. Look at what comes forth from that one apple seed that gets planted in the ground. Thousands of apples and seeds come forth from it. It's an amazing thing. And Jesus says, this is what's going to happen because this is why I came. I came to fulfill this purpose. You know, some people have such a strange conception of Jesus. They make him, in their mind, inhuman. What do I mean by that? Well, it's not like he had any human connection. Do you think that when Jesus held a baby in his arms, do you think he was delighted by that? Oh, look at that baby. Look at how wonderful it is. Or do you think Jesus said, I have no concerns about such things. I must die on the cross. Are you kidding me? Do you think when Jesus saw a sunset, that Jesus enjoyed it? I'll tell you something. When Jesus held the baby and saw the sunset, he probably enjoyed it more than any of us because he knew more about it than any of us. And he could say, yeah, you know, I did that. Jesus enjoyed all the legitimate good things in life to enjoy. I mean, he did. And he did so without guilt. He didn't say, well, I'm enjoying this, but I really shouldn't because I'm dying on a cross. No, that's not it at all. This is what I want you to understand. Jesus enjoyed those good things of life, and he did them without guilt. But at the same time, he realized that his life had a higher purpose than to enjoy the good things of life. And the higher purpose was to lay down his life in self-sacrifice and to bring salvation to the world, to bring salvation to you and I. Do you see what I'm talking about? Yes, he enjoyed the good things of life, but he realized that his life was lived for a higher purpose than just enjoying those good things of life. Now, you and I might be saying, well, okay, that's good for you, Jesus. Boy, that's good. But, you know, for me, I can be happy just enjoying the good things of life, and I don't need that higher purpose. And then you read verse 26. If anyone serves me, let him follow me. Jesus went this way. You and I, who claim to be servants of Jesus, who claim to be followers of Jesus, we must go this same way also. God bless you in enjoying the good things of life. What do you think I'm going to stand before you and say, have a miserable week for Jesus' sake? I want your life to be filled with the good things in this life, and I want you to enjoy them, and I want you to enjoy them without guilt. But I also want you to understand that your life, your Santa Barbara life, has a higher purpose than enjoying the good things of this life. God has put you on this earth to make an impact and a difference, to lay down your life in sacrificial service, and to do it all in his name and to advance the kingdom of Jesus. And you are going to find the greatest satisfaction in your life in doing those things. That's this pattern that Jesus gave us. If anyone serves me, let him follow me. This is what Jesus told us to do. Matter of fact, he wants us to live where he is. Verse 26, where I am, there my servant will be also. Wherever Jesus is, that's where his servants want to be. Jesus, if you're going to the cross, we want to be there too. And then he says in verse 26 something else really remarkable. If anyone serves me, him my Father will honor. Him my Father will honor? You and I can receive honor from God? Are you kidding me? Listen, you can receive honor from a stranger. honor from somebody who's down and out. You go, well, okay, great. A little bit of honor from them. But if somebody high and mighty, prestigious and respected, if they honor you, go, wow, they honor me. Isn't that wonderful? Friends, do you realize that the greatest honor there is in the universe is to be honored by God? And God says, if you serve my son, I will honor you. That's amazing. That's almost beyond our comprehension. Verse 27. Now my soul is troubled, and what shall I say? Father, save me from this hour, but for this purpose I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. Jesus said, my soul's troubled. I see what awaits me there on the cross. I understand the physical suffering, but far more than the physical suffering, I understand I'm troubled by the spiritual suffering that I will endure on the cross. Because you understand that as terrible as the physical agony of the cross was, the spiritual agony that Jesus experienced on the cross was much worse. You understand that, don't you? That is Jesus, the holy, spotless Son of God, as he is there on the cross, that spiritual transaction took place, that God the Father put upon him all the guilt, all the shame, all the darkness that your sin and my sin deserves, and it was put upon Jesus, and it was judged in him, and he had to endure it. He took my sin so that I could have his righteousness. That would trouble any sane person. Jesus says, I'm troubled by this, but am I going to draw back? Am I going to quit because I'm troubled? No, because I came for this purpose. For this purpose, I came to this hour. Father, glorify your name. And then pick it up in the middle of verse 28. Then a voice came from heaven saying, I have glorified it and will glorify it again. Therefore, the people who stood by and heard it said that it had thundered. Others said, an angel has spoken to him. Jesus answered and said, this voice had not come because of me, but for your sake. As Jesus cries out, Father, glorify your name, God the Father spoke from heaven and said, did you notice what he said there? It's right there in verse 28. I have both glorified it and will glorify it again. Oh, Jesus, I have glorified my name in you, and I will do it again, and I'll do it constantly. I don't think that this was spoken primarily for the sake of Jesus, although obviously he benefited. It was spoken primarily for the people around him. Even though some didn't understand, whoever did understand, understood that Jesus was completely within the will of God. Because when the Messiah starts talking about going to the cross, you better know that he's still in the will of God. And that's what they understood. This was an assurance. This was a voice from heaven giving that assurance. Now look at what Jesus says in verse 31. He says, now is the judgment of this world. Now the ruler of this world will be cast out. And I, if I am lifted up from the earth, will draw all peoples to myself. This he said, signifying by what death he would die. Notice this, what Jesus says in verse 31. Talking about his going to the cross, he said, now is the judgment of this world. When I go to the cross, the world will be judged. My friends, you know, the Bible is filled with counterintuitive things, things that don't really seem to match up when we first think about it. This is one of the most counterintuitive things that Jesus ever did. Jesus went to the cross because the world judged him and found him guilty. That's why he went to the cross. The world judged him and said, you're guilty, you should die a shameful and painful and humiliating death. Send him to the cross. That's why Jesus went to the cross. But do you know what God says? God says, world, you judged Jesus to be guilty. I overrule your judgment. I got a higher court here. And instead of Jesus being judged on the cross, no, the world will be judged at the cross. And how is the world judged? Friends, all the world's hatred, all the world's lies, all the world's darkness is exposed at the cross. Because just as much is the cross expresses the unfathomable love of God. It's the peak of the expression of God's love. So the cross is the absolute lowest expression of the hatred and darkness of humanity. Friends, God came to earth, lived an absolute sinless life among us. He only spoke truth, and he only rebuked people in power. He went around doing amazing miracles that did good for thousands of people. And when he did all that, mankind couldn't wait to put him on a cross. It doesn't get lower than that. God says, I'm going to judge that. But not only is the world to be judged at the cross, look what else there. It's in verse 31 as well. It also says, actually verse 32, now the ruler of this world will be cast out. The defeat of the world was also the defeat of Satan. And it was God's victory at the cross and our victory as well. What is this world? Friends, in the sense that John means it here in his gospel, the world basically means culture in opposition to God. Now, not all culture is in opposition to God, not by any means. But you know there is a spirit of the age. You know there's an attitude in the culture. And culture that is in opposition to Jesus is what John means by the world in this section. The world. Now, here's something startling that verse 32 says that I need to call your attention to. The world has a leader. The culture in opposition to Jesus has someone who rules it, someone who leads it, and it's Satan, the devil. I imagine, maybe I shouldn't imagine this, but I imagine as soon as I say those words, somebody here gasps. You seem like an educated man. You actually believe in a devil? You actually believe in some guy who runs around in red tights and a pitchfork. When the words get crossed up, you need to help me out a little bit. You believe in a guy that runs around in red tights and a pitchfork? No, I don't believe in the red tights. And the pitchfork, do with it what you want. But I'll just tell you this. Jesus believed that there was a devil. Jesus believed that there was a being in opposition to God who hates God and does everything he can to thwart the purposes of God and who also directs his attacks against the people of God. Now, you may or may not agree with Jesus on that point. But I'm just saying, Jesus believed that the world system, the culture in opposition to Jesus, had a leader, and that leader is the ruler of this world, Satan himself. And he says, verse 31, now the ruler of this world will be cast out. Verse 32, if I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all peoples to me. Again, he's speaking about his crucifixion. Very interesting, that word that's translated lifted up, it has two senses in the ancient language. The first sense in the ancient language is simply to be elevated, to be lifted up, to be elevated. The second sense in it is to be exalted or enthroned. You know, and you get how the concepts connect. Jesus probably intended both meanings by this. He said, lift me up on a cross and I will be exalted, I will be enthroned. Again, it seems contradictory to us, but it was true in Jesus. He comes to his place of enthronement because of the great sacrifice he laid out upon the cross. And he said that he would draw all peoples to himself. You know, one of the great preachers in England of the Victorian age was a man named Alexander McLaren. And McLaren said upon this idea that Jesus drawing all peoples to himself, he said that the cross of Jesus is the magnet of Christianity, that it draws people to him. And if you want people to be drawn by to Jesus, don't just teach Jesus the moral teacher, Jesus the man who loves the children, Jesus the good example. Teach Jesus on the cross, loving and crucified for humanity. That's what draws people. And friends, when you have people who don't preach the cross of Jesus, they just want to preach the nice guy Jesus, then folks, when you have that, you have a demagnetized Christianity. But Christianity is just like scrap iron. It has no attractive power to it. But we don't want that. Friends, let me tell you something. The cross of Jesus and his work in it, it draws people. You don't even understand how many people it draws. I'm going to bet you don't understand how many people it draws. Now, I apologize. I'm going to give you a statistic just from the United States. And I apologize because Jesus draws people from all over the world, all over the world. Christianity is much larger outside the United States and inside the United States. You understand that, don't you? So okay, I'm just talking about the United States. I apologize for that. But let me give you an idea of how God draws people to himself here in the United States. How many people do you think attend sporting events in the United States? And I mean pro, college, probably even high school included, a very broad category. How many people attend? Well, the figure that I saw, the figures were a little bit old, but they were very inclusive. It said 470 million people a year. That average is about 9 million a week go to sporting events of some kind of thing. Okay, 9 million a week. Do you know how many people attend church or a house of worship on Sunday in the United States? The conservative estimates are 60 million people a week. That's more than 3 billion people a year. I mean, it's the same people, obviously, but, you know, people, units, whatever you want to talk about. Now, you know what? When I turn on the television, I see hours and hours of television programming devoted to sports. And I enjoy a lot of it. But wouldn't you think that far more people attend sporting events in the United States than attend houses of worship? It's not true. It's not true by a long shot. Well, what explains this discrepancy? The attractive power of Jesus. Even though the world doesn't want to think about it, even though it doesn't want to let you know, even though it likes to keep it hidden as much as it can, friends, don't deny the attractive power of Jesus to draw people unto himself. Now look at their response here in verse 34. The people answered him, "We have heard from the law that the Christ remains forever, and how can you say the Son of Man must be lifted up? Who is this Son of Man?" Then Jesus said to them, "A little while longer, the light is with you. Walk while you have the light, lest darkness overtake you. He who walks in darkness does not know where he is going. While you have the light, believe in the light, that you may become sons of light." These things Jesus spoke and departed and was hidden from them. You see, the people had a question, a theological question. They said, listen, we thought that the Messiah just gets glorified, that he reigns forever, that he never dies. And Jesus didn't give an explained answer to that. Jesus could have said, well, no, you haven't read Isaiah 53 in the Hebrew Scriptures, because that talks about the suffering of the Messiah. You haven't read Psalm 22. You don't understand that there's an aspect in which the Messiah is glorified and reigns forever, but there's another aspect in which the Messiah suffers and dies. Jesus could have explained that, but he has such an urgency that he doesn't go into the explanation. Do you see what he says instead? Look at what Jesus says instead, right there in verse 35. He says, "A little while longer the light is with you. While you have the light, believe in the light." In other words, his public ministry is about to end. It's almost as if Jesus says, look, I could discuss theological problems with you all day long. You need to come to the light. The light won't be with you forever. This is almost the end of my earthly preaching. You need to come to the light now. Don't delay. And friends, I wish I could impress upon you here this morning, any of you who have not yet given your life to Jesus Christ, I wish I could just impress upon you an urgency to the decision. Sometimes people say that the most dangerous lie of the devil is not there is no God. The most dangerous lie of the devil is not the Bible is not true. No, it's been well said that the most dangerous lie of the devil is there is no hurry. Take your time. Think about it tomorrow. Have a few more years of fun, and then you can get right with God. Friends, you don't know how much more light you have. You don't know how much longer God will prevail upon your heart. I'll put it to you this way. You got to answer the phone while it's ringing. And if right now Jesus is ringing your heart, you better answer it. You might say, oh, well, it's going to ring tomorrow. You don't know if it's going to ring tomorrow. If it's ringing now, you better pick up the phone and make your connection with Jesus Christ. Continuing on, verse 37. But although he had done so many signs before them, they did not believe in him, that the word of Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled, which he spoke, "Lord, who has believed our report? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed?" Therefore they could not believe, because Isaiah said again, "He has blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts, lest they should see with their eyes, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them." These things Isaiah said when he saw his glory and spoke of him. You see, John's trying to explain to us, if Jesus was so powerful, if Jesus was so true, if Jesus was so real, why didn't everybody believe in him? Well, first of all, remember, Many people did believe in him. John's going to tell us about some of those people in just a moment. But please remember this as well. The Bible prophesied that many people would reject Jesus. The Bible prophesied from Isaiah chapter 53, verse 1, and Isaiah chapter 6, verses 9 and 10, these two passages that are quoted here in this section, that even though God has revealed himself to many, they would reject him. To whom has the arm of the Lord be revealed? That many people would harden their hearts and their eyes would be blind. Friends, here's the point. You've got to turn to God now when he reveals himself to you and not delay it for a future time. Or you may find yourself in this condition that Isaiah prophesied about, where you're no longer able to come unto him. Verse 42. Nevertheless, even among the rulers, many believed in him. But because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him, lest they should be put out of the synagogue, for they loved the praise of men more than the praise of God. Now, there were more followers and believers in Jesus than were apparent in the days of Jesus, because some proportion of the followers of Jesus were secret followers of Jesus. They were secret followers. What do I mean by that? Well, they believed in him, but they would not publicly proclaim it. It's interesting. Jesus has his secret followers today, doesn't he? Some of you might be secret followers of Jesus. Now, let me say this. I suppose I would definitely prefer you be a secret follower of Jesus rather than no follower of Jesus. But I hope that your secret following of him is only a temporary condition. And that if you find yourself embarrassed to proclaim yourself a Christian, embarrassed before your family, your neighbors, your coworkers, that God would give you the grace and the ability to do that. To just simply confess who it is and to no longer be a secret Christian. Because I don't want you to be in the same place that they were. Did you see that in verse 43? They love the praise of men more than the praise of God. Now, friends, what could be greater than being honored by God? We talked about it earlier in the message. What could be greater than having the praise of God? That's the ultimate, isn't it? Here's the problem. It's my problem. I don't know if it's your problem. I want the praise of God, and I think it's more important. But the problem is I can't see God, and he's up there in heaven somewhere. The person that might be mocking me or that I don't want to be afraid of is right in front of me, and I can see their face. So for some reason, their praise seems more important to me in that moment than the praise of God. What do I got to do? I got to think it through. I can say, no, I can't judge this only by what I see. I see their face, and I don't see God, but his praise is more important. And so I'm going to reveal who I am and what I've come to do. Now we're going to pick it up here at verse 44. But as we do, I need to tell you that verse 44 begins this section that ends the public ministry of Jesus in the Gospel of John. So in this last plea, he's going to sum up many of his themes. Let's look at it here together. Verse 44. Then Jesus cried out and said, he who believes in me believes not in me, but in him who sent me. And he who sees me sees him who sent me. I have come as a light into the world, that whoever believes in me should not abide in darkness. And if anyone hears my words and does not believe, I do not judge him, for I did not come to the world to judge the world, but to save the world. He who rejects me and does not receive my words has that which judges him. The word which I have spoken will judge him in the last day. For I have not spoken on my own authority, but the Father who sent me gave me a command what I should say and what I should speak. And I know that his commandment is everlasting life. Therefore, whatever I speak, just as the Father has told me, so I speak. Verse 44 says that Jesus cried out and said, he shouted this. It's the last words that the public is going to hear from him. And so he wants them to know, listen, you got to listen to me. These are my last words to you. You got to hear this cry of my heart. You notice what he says there in verse 45. He who sees me sees him who sent me. How about this? Everybody, this is my last words to you. You got to understand what I'm saying. Please, if you want to know what God is like, just look at me. I'm amazed at your lack of response.
Let me explain what I mean.
It means that we're entirely too churchified. We hear of a man standing in front of other people and claiming to perfectly represent God, and we go, yeah, yeah. Friends, do you realize how crazy that is? How remarkable it is? For a man to say, these are the last words I ever want to say in public. Let me tell you what I say. Hello, hey everybody, I perfectly represent God in heaven. People are like, what? Friends, this is what sent Jesus to the cross, because he, as they said, being man, claimed to be God, and he didn't back off from it at the very end. He said, that's exactly who I am. Friends, a man who claims to perfectly represent God, either he's crazy, or he's evil, or he's the real deal. And Jesus is the real deal. He is the perfect representation. He is God in human flesh. He is God the Son and the Son of God. And he wanted everybody to know it. Don't miss it. And then he said, I have come as a light into the world. Don't go after the darkness. Come after the light. You see, he's making a decision. He's making make a decision. Light and darkness. Which is it going to be? Is it going to be light or darkness? Make your choice. And then I'll conclude with this thing that Jesus said in verse 47. It really struck me. I did not come to judge the world, but to save the world. Friends, that's a beautiful statement from Jesus. Let me put it to you this way. Let's see if I can explain it. Jesus did not need to come in human flesh if his main goal was to judge the world. God can judge the world from his throne in heaven. He doesn't need to come and walk among us. Jesus didn't need to come as a baby in Bethlehem to judge the world. He didn't need to live for 33 years and go through all the things we go through to judge the world. He didn't need to be tempted in the wilderness to judge the world. God can judge the world anytime he wants to. But if he wanted to save humanity, if he wanted to rescue a people unto himself, he had to come just like us. He had to come as a baby and live a life and go through the things we do and experience the temptation and go all the way to the cross. Do you see how much he cares about you? Do you see how desperately he wants to rescue humanity from their sin, from their shame, from their addictions, from their bondage, from everything? And then having him set free, he says, you go out and do my work. You go out and you get sent just like the Father sent me. Can I say that God did not send us into the world to judge the world, but to come in the heart of Jesus and to serve and to bring his rescue and his salvation to as many people as possible? That's the mission that he's given us to do. But it begins with you receiving it first. So let me pray right here, right now. Father in heaven, I am so grateful that Jesus, the Son of God, did not come into the world to judge the world, but to save the world. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you for all the trouble that you went through. Thank you for all the pain you endured. Thank you for all the annoying things that you bore up under so that you could bring rescue and salvation to us. You didn't have to do any of that to judge the world, but to save us, you did. And we're so grateful. Lord, I simply pray that any among us here this morning who need that rescue from you, that you put upon their hearts right now, that they would put their trust in you and the great work that you did on the cross for them. Father, for all of us, I pray that you give us a heart for our community, you give us a heart for our nation, and you would send us out into the world to love and to sacrifice and to serve and to point people to the kingdom of God. Do it, Lord, for your glory. Do it, Lord, in the name of Jesus among us. Amen.